Paranormal Perception is made possible with support from Unearthing the Supernatural, a team of Native American paranormal investigators. You've seen them on the Travel Channel and streaming on Peacock, and of course you hear them right here on Paranormal Perception in their role as my paranormal and spiritual consultant. You can watch all of their investigations on their YouTube channel, which includes their new vodcast, A Meeting of Warriors. Unearthing the Supernatural are few of many, one story of thousands. Let them hear yours. Paranormal Perception 360 Degrees with Brenda.
The 17th century Ye Olde King's Head Hotel on Lower Bridge Street in Chester, believed by many to be Britain's most haunted hotel, is now open to overnight stays by people who would then share the experience on a weekly paranormal show. You know you want to. Tickets go on sale starting March 26th at myhauntedhotel.com. The Geneseo City Museum in Geneseo, Kansas opened a permanent exhibit on local encounters with UFOs and aliens that it hopes will lead to the tiny town of 200 to be named the UFO capital of Kansas, possibly in time for World UFO Day on July 2nd. A shuttered hospital, said to be one of the most haunted locations in Minnesota, has gone on the market for a surprisingly low price. The Pokagama Sanatorium in Park City was once a treatment center for tuberculosis patients for nearly four decades before closing in the 1940s. Ownership of the facility changed hands several times until the site was abandoned in 1986. As you might imagine, as the years went on, all manner of spooky stories became attached to the century-old building, wherein countless individuals died long ago. New research shows that the Earth's core is leaking the rare helium isotope, helium-3, which was mostly formed by the Big Bang Theory, a discovery which may prove the theory that our planet was formed inside a solar nebula or gaseous cloud that eventually created the sun and the planets of our solar system out of condensation. Using the gene editing technology CRISPR, researchers at the Virginia-based biotech company InBio are genetically modifying cats to create an allergy-free feline that lacks the protein BELL-D1, which ends up in their saliva and tears and the fur that they're constantly cleaning and causes allergy symptoms in humans.
Paranormal Perception 360 Degrees with Brenda. Paranormal Perception is produced by 22 Creations Multimedia LLC. Close your eyes. Open your ears and your mind.
I'm watching you.
By the end of this episode, you'll have a new perception on the paranormal.
I'm gonna get you.
Giving you a new perception on the paranormal. Before we're no longer allowed to. This is Paranormal Perception with Henry San Miguel.
What is real? How do you define real?
Before we get started, does anyone want to get out?
This show is your red pill for all topics in the paranormal. Parapsychology, demons, disclosure,
restless souls,
conspiracy revelations,
prophecy,
cryptocurrencies,
strange creatures,
the metaverse.
This is the world that you know.
This is your guide through the new normal for the new decade. On this show, paranormal doesn't just mean things that go bump in the night. It means a new perception on the paranormal. A paranormal perception with Henry San Miguel. And the team continues to grow. Welcome to Paranormal Perception. I'm Henry, and that, again, was a brand new voice. It wasn't me. That was a brand new voice that you heard there doing Paranormal Perception 360 Degrees. So join me in welcoming Brenda. I can hear you all cheering, clapping. Welcome, Brenda. She joins now Nicole and myself. You'll hear that one of us from week to week doing the Paranormal Perception 360 feature. I know we missed it a week ago. There were some signals crossed, so you know I figured, you know, let's add to the team. So that way, if Nicole can't do it for whatever reason, if I can't, Brenda can, or if she can, you know, vice versa. We at least we have somebody as a backup. Hopefully, it will never get to the point where we have to ask Hero and Sean Clint to jump in. But if they have to, they will. So, like I said, welcome to Paranormal Perception. We'll get into Area 51. It's a topic that I haven't covered on the show. We will today with somebody who was stationed at Area 51. Before we do that, let me let you know, if you're not, a lot of you are already following the Paranormal Perception Facebook page. We also have one now for OC Paracon. It's simply facebook.com/OC Paracon. I know you hear announcements here. I'm about to give you some right now, but everything, and I mean everything, is about to drop on the Facebook, the OC Paracon Facebook page. So make sure you follow it if you're not, and you'll be able to get tickets, and everything is on there. For example, we looked at a couple. It's down to two locations, and I'll be honest, it's not because they're lacking in anything. It's hard to decide between the two because I really like both of the event managers that are running the places. They love the paranormal. They have stories. One of them went to Zach's haunted museum and has some experiences. They've had experiences, and one of them told me about things that happened in the hotel, and as a result of that, there's now paranormal activity in the hotel. So that's what's making it hard, honestly, to pick between the two, because they're perfect. The people are perfect, and they both actually want to be at Paranormal Perception, which of course they're invited to. But I'll decide on one. As hard as it is, I'll decide on one, and I'll let you all know probably next week where the location is going to be. But what's up on the Facebook page right now is sponsorships. You can still sponsor the OC Paracon if you want to. There's a few of them. I talked about the Paranormal Perception table. You can sponsor the badge and lanyards. You can have your logo, your company logo on the badge, on the lanyards. So there's no way nobody will not know that you're a sponsor of OC Paracon. The one thing I have to change, if it hasn't been changed by the time you're listening to this, the full sponsorship, that's the big one. That one, I may have to limit it to two or maybe three, only because included in that is commercials here on Paranormal Perception. I don't want to flood the shows with five or six commercials. I know you'll like them because it'll be Paranormal Perception or paranormal related, but you don't tune into podcast. You don't listen to podcast to listen to commercials, at least not a lot of them. So I'm going to limit it to two or three of the big sponsors. That's a change that, like I said, if it's not on there already, it's coming soon, just so you know. And yeah, now that I know the locations, I know how many we can have, I'll probably put it up sometime next week. I'll let you know how many vendor exhibitor tables we're allowed to have. So if you want to exhibit at OC Paracon, or you have a book or something, you have a shop that you want to show off to people, to a paranormal audience, you'll be able to do that pretty soon. And of course, the most important thing, the tickets. When do those go on sale? Well, July 1st is what I said, and they will go on sale July 1st. I'll have a link to that. But the other thing, once you have the tickets, or actually what makes you want to or not get the tickets, who's going to be there? Who am I getting tickets to hear from? Not everyone's confirmed yet. We're pretty close. Two of them that are confirmed that I can tell you right now. Drum roll, please. Well, we don't have a drum in here. Unearthing the Supernatural. My guys, they're part of the team. Of course, they're confirmed already. Bringing Balance to All Worlds. That's what they're going to call their panel. It's basically introducing who they are. And they're also going to do an opening ceremony and blessing. Now, if you haven't seen that in person, I know I put up video on our YouTube channel when we did it. They did it at Vulture City and some other conventions we've been at. But if you haven't been a part of it, you haven't been blessed by Hero in person, it is something to behold, number one. And take it seriously. It's not just an opportunity for you to take video and put it up on your Instagram or your social media. It's a real blessing. So if you're going to partake in it, take it seriously, because you will be blessed. You will get protection from the spirits, from Hero. So they'll start it with that. Then the other panel that I can confirm to you is from Paranormal Pete, who has been on Paranormal Perception, and I've been on his show. He'll be on at OC Paracon. He's going to do a panel called Setting Yourself Up for Success Through Data Review, meaning, plain and simple, what I ask here. You have all this evidence now. Now what do you do with it? You have EVPs, you have this. How do you present it, and what do you do with it? What's the next step? So that's what that's going to be all about. And then there's another one that I can half confirm because of me. I'm on it, called Broadcasting the Paranormal. Pretty self-explanatory. The other ones that I'm going to have, the other guests that I'm going to have on, haven't confirmed yet. So like I said, I can half confirm those because I'll be on those. And then some other ones that, like I said, we haven't confirmed yet, but you'll get all the guest speakers very, very soon on the Facebook page. Right now, I flipped the on-off switch on the OC Paracon website. As soon as we have all the stuff ready to go, I'll flip it back on, and you'll see it come up. In fact, I'll tease it. You're going to see a new logo. There's a new logo coming for this year for the in-person. And all of you that like the pumpkin from last year, that's not going away. It's going to become our mascot, if you will. And in fact, that little pumpkin is going to do something special at OC Paracon. Those of you that go, you'll see what it is. So everything again, follow our Facebook page, facebook.com/OC Paracon for everything, of course, OC Paracon. So now, as I said, for this week's guest, Area 51. Again, a topic I don't know why, but I haven't covered here. We've talked UFOs, UAPs, we've talked about disclosure, but we've never talked Area 51. I know it's the most mysterious, controversial, if you will, talked about. There's so many things that people believe are going on there. Some deny, some say yes, some don't know. We're going to talk to someone who was actually assigned at Area 51. He was working there for a while. He's going to tell us a couple things. The first thing is, what was really going on? What was he doing there? What was going on in Area 51? The other, it's not even called Area 51. That's not its real name. It had a real name. We'll find out all of that in just a second.
Two Round Paranormal presents the Old B&O Fundraiser Event. Happening September 24th and 25th at a historically haunted railroad roundhouse located in Ohio. There'll be vendors, Q&A sessions with special guests, VIP ghost hunts, silent auctions, and more. Celebrity guests include investigator, TV personality, and musician Sean Austin and Santiago Cirillo from AMC's The Walking Dead. More celebrity guests will be announced soon. There'll be a screening of Sean Austin's latest documentary and a concert featuring Sean and his music. To attend this unique event in September. All proceeds go to the Midwest Railway Preservation Society Roundhouse Restoration Project. Visit TwoRealmParanormalResearch.com for more info or to become a sponsor or get a vendor table. Tickets for the Old B&O fundraiser events will go on sale May 1st.
Ladies and gentlemen, would you please be seated? Our program is about to resume.
Paranormal Perception.
And we continue. Like I said, let's cover a topic that I actually have never covered here on the show. Another one. We'll talk about Area 51 now, but not the way you guys are probably thinking or hoping, I should say. And I know it's April 1st. No, we're not fooling you. We really are going to talk about Area 51. There's a book outside, and I have a link to it on the show description, called CIA Station D, Area 51, The Complete Illustrated History of the CIA Station D at Area 51. Available on Amazon and any other usual suspects. Again, I have a link if you want to get it. It's by T.D. Barnes. He's the author, obviously, and he also used to work there. He used to be the CIA specialist stationed at Area 51. T.D. Barnes, welcome to the show. How are you?
Hey, my pleasure. Good to have you.
Yeah, so let's start with your story, first of all. Like, how did you come to be assigned to Area 51?
That's kind of a long story. You know, a lot of people think that everything takes place at Area 51. But my first exposure to Area 51 was while I was in the Army at Fort Bliss, Texas. They were getting ready to build the A-12 spy plane, Mach 3 spy plane, to replace the U-2. And they got wind that the Russians had a U radar, and they had moved it to Cuba. And the CIA needed to find out if that radar was going to be able to track this new plane. And I was top of my game in the Army, radar, missiles, that sort of thing. So they recruited me to make a ghost flight to Cuba. to we make them turn on the radar, and then we would spoof it, make it think it was seeing things it wasn't supposed to see. And we determined, yes, they would be able to track the plane. And so even though we built the plane, we never flew it over the Soviet Union. And then my next involvement was with the CIA, it was a part of the Seven Sisters. I was on the NASA high-range radar station about 65 miles from Area 51. And when they'd have a secret flight out of Area 51, the Air Defense Command and NORAD would notify us, we're going to have something flying today, don't talk about it, and, you know, don't mention it, don't record it. And then it eventually brought me out to Area 51. I was sort of a specialist in the hypersonic flight support by this time. So they brought me out there and at the end of the A-12 project and for the Soviet MiG projects we did, and we were doing stealth and that sort of thing. So that's how I got out there. So it was a long journey to get out there.
What year did you say you were stationed?
I actually went to Area 51 in 1968.
Okay, so I mean, were you aware, and as far as you know, anybody else stationed there, were you guys aware of the reputation that the mysterious, the alien things that were going on? Were you aware of that before you got assigned there?
This is an interesting thing that a lot of people don't realize is the alien thing didn't start until the CIA turned the Area 51 over to the Air Force in 1979. We had never, you know, we were conscious of us being UFOs. We were flying these planes that flying many times higher than any known plane was able to fly. And we find all kinds of technology demonstration platforms out there, you know, just a proof of concept. But the word about the UFO didn't really start about 1979 and 80 when they realized the Air Force took it over. The word got out that the CIA had been there for 20 years. And no one knew about it and didn't know what they'd been doing. And that's when the imagination run wild. And that's when the UFO thing really kicked off and they said, oh, they had aliens out there and that sort of thing.
Yeah, it seems that's what it is for everyone, especially the conspiracy theorists out there. Their imagination just going wild. And I'm sure you every interview you do, you get this question. I mean, I'm sure anybody that says they worked at Area 51, the question's got to come up sometime. I mean, and I'll ask you, TD, from your time there, do you think it would be plausible that there was alien technology being studied anywhere on the base?
No, absolutely not. We would have known it. No, there was nothing like that at all. And the if a person knew really what all we went through to develop the engines to fly Mach 3 flight, that, I mean, we had the engines blow up. But that was done with Pratt and Whitney mostly. And then, of course, North America was doing the same thing for SB-70. We were just getting into Mach 3 flight. And the design and engines that could handle that speed was, you know, really a challenge. Nothing was built at Area 51. They'd build it elsewhere and then bring it to Area 51. And that's where we tried out and you know, would say, show us what you got. But there's like these unmanned craft and the proof of concept planes, the platforms and stuff. They'd be built at, like Boeing would build theirs up in Washington, and Lockheed would build theirs maybe in California. And people see them flying at their home bases. You know, they'd have their own flight ranges, and people see all these weird things. And then they would end up out here at 51. That's where we would, we had the people and the technology to evaluate what they were building, and that's what we would do out there.
So to clarify, you weren't building the prototypes. You were the radar specialist, like I said. So what did that mean specifically that you were doing for the planes being built there?
We were doing, mostly we were getting into stealth and that sort of thing at that time. And so they would bring, we had the older, just about every radar known to man, including Russian radar and what have you out there. And so we could look at whatever the contractors were building, the aerospace contractors. And this is, you know, they'd be competing. They were coming up with a new plane or something, like a B-2 bomber or F-22 or any of those. The competing companies would build them at their home, home bases, and actually flight test them there. And then when they got ready to try to sell them to the Navy or the Air Force or whomever, everyone would show up out of Area 51. They were our customers. And, you know, I had Boeing out there 1 week showing the Navy what they had, and we'd put it through the paces, had all the means of evaluating it. And so actually the Navy and the Boeing both would be our customers. And then maybe the next week we would have Lockheed out there doing the same thing with what they were competing with. And that's part of the big secrecy. Area 51 is keeping the secrets. Boeing wouldn't want Lockheed to know what they were doing and vice versa. So we were very close mouthed about what was going on out there just to protect our customers.
Yeah, and you mentioned this in your book and other articles I've read about you. Even the people assigned, your co-workers, if you will, even they didn't know what you guys were doing, right?
No. When it was just the U-2 program and actually even just the A-12 program, you know, people roam all over the place and you talk freely all you wanted to. But once the had these other agencies start bringing stuff in, you know, we had just about all of our intelligence agencies involved with different things, and they started bringing projects out there, and they actually became the CIA's customers. It wasn't our project; it's someone else's. We just had the equipment and the people that knew how to evaluate it. And maybe like in my group, for example, there was 30 of us at the max, and we all were specialists in different fields, and we all worked together and played together. Stayed in the same building, but we may have a different customer. We have two or three projects going at one time. And even among ourselves, we wouldn't go and say, hey, what are you building? How does it work? Or who's that? Who are you doing that for? You knew basically what they were doing, and if you needed to help a hand with something, you say, hey, Joe, come give me a hand with this. But he wouldn't ask, well, what is this? You know, you just didn't ask questions and he didn't volunteer anything.
Yeah, definitely. A lot of the people on social media today, I don't think they could be assigned that. I don't think they know how to keep secrets like you guys do.
Well, even at CIA itself, like with Oxcart, the A-12 program, it was on the second floor back at CIA headquarters. And you had to have a special clearance even within CIA headquarters to even go on that floor. And you absolutely had to have a need to know. In the same way, you know, where we worked, if you didn't have a need to know, you didn't ask and you didn't tell. It's just as simple as that. I don't care if it was your best friend. You just didn't, you didn't volunteer that information.
Yeah. And this will be the last sort of UFO related question. Why do you think, opinion, why do you think the UFO community, especially, why are they so still after all these years? They're still so fascinated and they swear that something is going on there in Area 51.
I think, you know, it's kind of natural. Mostly because of the secrecy, and they believe the government keeps secrets from them and stuff. And even if it was going on, the government would deny it, of course. You know, that was just part of our culture out there. We had a cover story for everything. Nothing was what it seemed. And but, you know, people want to believe, and they do see UFOs. I mean, there's no question about that. But the people, professionals, you know, professionals, we're used to seeing that. We just wonder who that is. But we don't think it's, something from outer space or anything like that. But like these sightings that the Navy's been experiencing, we were doing that. That's the same kind of spoofing we were doing back in the 60s against the Russians' Talking radar. As we could make that radar think it was tracking one plane, 10 planes, 20 planes, going, coming, whatever we wanted it to do. We could electronically make it see what we wanted it to see.
So I guess it could be said, you tell me if it's accurate or not, that you were one of the few people that had pretty much a front row seat to the beginnings of the Cold War.
I was involved with that project going on because I was gotten up to that level, not bragging or anything, it's just about circumstance. And once you got involved, then you just moved from one project to another. You know, I got to do a lot of things. You got to remember, a lot of these projects were very short time period, like the MiG-21 program that we did that just completely turned around the kill ratio in Vietnam. It wasn't 3 months is all it lasted. And, you know, a lot of them were very short time. So we got to do a lot of things just because we were there and they had expertise to do it. You know?
So let's start getting into your book now. The first thing I keep saying Area 51, but that's actually not its real name, and it's actually in the title of the book. So talk about what Area 51's real name is and how you found that out.
We referred to it even when I was out there. You got to remember, less than 5% of the people working at Area 51 ever knew that the CIA was even involved. They didn't know who they worked for. You know, they thought they did, but they didn't. Even the Air Force was working strictly for the CIA. They weren't working for the Air Force. And at that time, it didn't have a name. It never had an official name. Actually, until first official name it ever got was Homey Airport in the recent years. But they needed a name to put on the records and stuff. And Lockheed would use one name, different companies use different names. But the CIA was called the Station D. And the reason for this is they had the three U-2 detachments in Turkey, Japan, and Germany. And they were detachments A, B, and C. So it just fit right in line with the home base would be Station D. So the documents actually called it Station D. You'll find all kinds of declassified documents. But even back at CIA headquarters, when I brought this up, they weren't aware of it. And I said, go check your records.
But I don't know this story. I don't know if you know what it is. What's the origin of the Area 51 name?
The actual origin of it was the Russians were shooting down. We were trying to see what Russia was doing behind the sealed borders. And we fly, the Air Force was flying Ferret flights into Russia, and that shot down over 200. We had over 200 air crews that had been shot down over Russia that people didn't even know about. And we decided to build a U-2, and the President Eisenhower didn't want the military flying because it'd be an act of war. So he chose the CIA to build the U-2, and they needed a place to test it and train the pilots and in secrecy. And Nevada at the time had only 237,000 people in the entire state. Plus, during World War II, the United States had moved the West Coast line of defense from California to Nevada. The Coast Guard was stationed here, the Navy was stationed here, the Marines and the Army. Everybody was in Nevada, so it was just a natural place to go. It was just another government project. And of course, we're doing the atomic bomb testing right next door. And then NASA we were developing a nuclear rocket engine to go to Mars right next door to where we were working. And then we had the X-15 flights and that sort of thing that I was involved in.
Now, as far as the book, your book is concerned, and don't give out the whole thing, but what history does it cover? And I asked that only because, like you said, it was such a secret base and you didn't really want to know. So what history does your book cover?
It covers the entire CIA era, but what is really, really interesting is nobody, even like in the agency, my books, they use them as their reference back there because they didn't know. But the we had a lot of battles. No one liked the CIA. The president didn't like them. Johnson didn't like them because they told him to stay out of Vietnam. Truman didn't like them. And so we had a lot of internal battles just to exist. And kind of like Israel, you might say. And then, of course, the Air Force didn't want us. And all the intelligence agencies had their own secrets. They didn't want competition. So, and then internally, even within the CIA, it was a covert activity. And all of a sudden, they were bringing in science and technology. And we were taken away from the covert funds to fund the U-2 program and that sort of thing. So the U-2 program is what developed the science and technology director of the CIA. And it got them into the science and technology business. And that, expanded into the stealth. But, the CIA built the first stealth plane, which was the A-12. And it wasn't totally stealth, it was about 90%. But, it carried 80,000 pounds of fuel and got up to 2,200-degree temperature in places. So there's no way you could completely make it a stealth plane.
And to wrap up, what do you hope people, especially, because, it's going to get the attention of both those that believe that there's alien there and those that just are interested in knowing the history of Area 51 or Station D now. But what do you hope that they get out of the reading your book, especially the ones that you can't convince that there isn't alien technology going on in there? What do you hope they take away from reading your book?
I went into quite a bit of detail right at the end of the book of about the UFO thing. And because we created a lot of UFO sightings. We flew 2,850 missions in the A-12 plane alone out of Area 51. These were secret. And this, we're talking about a plane that flew 17 miles higher and faster than a bullet. And people would see this thing, you know, every now and then flash when the sun hit just right or something. And it was a UFO. And then a lot of the proof of concept things that we were flying out there, they were, you might say, out of this world in technology, but that's, they were, we were the ones that built them. So I think people are going to learn a lot about the internal battles that we had, even standing in existence, and the Station D part is what got us kicked out of Area 51 when President Carter learned that the CIA had a station in the United States. He made it, immediately made us get rid of it and turn it over to the Air Force.
Yeah, so you'll definitely get that from the book. Again, the book is called CIA Station D, Area 51, The Complete Illustrated History of the CIA Station D at Area 51, available everywhere online. I have a link down in the show description. You guys can get it there. Chidi, thanks a lot for spending some time and telling us a little bit of the history, and you know, hope to have you back again, and we'll talk some more, and you know, stay safe and have a great weekend.
My pleasure. Thank you very much.
Unearthing the Supernatural are a team of Native American investigators taught in the old ways of spiritual combat and healing. They answer the call from people and spirits who ask for their aid. Join them on their investigations and see the old ways of how the gifted communicate with the undead. But be warned, some investigations will be intense. Viewer discretion is advised. Visit youtube.com/unearthingthesupernatural to learn more about the team, watch seasons 1 and 2, and the upcoming new episodes for season 3. In the words of Hero, one of the founding members,
"We are unearthing the supernatural. We are few of many. One story of thousands. Let us hear yours."
By the end of this episode, you'll have a new perception on the paranormal.
We now return you to your unscheduled awakening. This is Paranormal Perception. It is Paranormal Perception continuing on. Did you enjoy your trip into Area 51? Now, no, it's not an April Fool's joke. I told you, T.D. Barnes was a radar, CIA radar specialist. He wasn't involved with alien technology. Or was he? I mean, I don't think he would tell you if he was anyway. I think he's allowed to tell. Not because he's hiding it, but I don't think he would be allowed to tell you. Because if you really think about it, seriously, I know, like we mentioned with T.D., a lot of you think that there's alien things or things that we don't know going on in Area 51. I mean, if it was made public, how would you all react? I mean, you see everything, like I mentioned, the TD. You see everything on social media, how people overreact to actors awarding themselves for being actors. How would you react to something real? Keep that in mind. That's why things are kept secret or are conspiracies to keep them from you, because look how you all react. So we will talk. Those of you that are, if you turned away already, too bad. You're going to miss this. But those of you that want to hear about aliens, about UFOs, we're going to do that right now with my paranormal and spiritual consultants, Hero and Sean Clamp from Unearthing the Supernatural. They do know. I know every time they come on, we usually talk about demons or darker entities or spirits. And last week, we talked about the Navajo folklore and myths and monsters. But they also know about UFOs, about the sky people. They were even on a show, Unidentified with Demi Lovato. They were on that show, so yeah, they might know a little bit, probably a little bit, like always, a little bit more than we know or we think we know. So of course, they're back to tell you all about it. So welcome back, guys. How you doing?
Going pretty good. Yes, we're back with more knowledge.
Excited to be able to bring you guys some more indigenous teachings.
Yeah, and seriously, they do know about it because they you can watch it. It's still streaming on, I think it's still streaming on Peacock, right? Before I say that, yeah, it's called what is it called? Unidentified.
Unidentified with Demi Lovato.
Yeah. It's a, what is it, four episodes?
Yeah, it's about four episodes. So if you want to check out the one where Hero and I are exclusively on, you know, you can go to episode two, and that one's featured in Vulture City.
Yeah, so if there's anyone who hasn't seen it, doesn't know what the show is all about, tell them real quick without spoiling the whole thing in case they want to go watch it. What is Unidentified? What was the whole gist of that show?
So the whole gist of Unidentified with Demi Lovato is she is pretty much going on a journey to find answers of experiences that she's had with extraterrestrial beings. So she's on a quest with her sister and her best friend, or their best friend, and they're pretty much traveling all over the place, talking with experts to try to see if they can kind of piece together the mystery of what she's experienced in the past.
Now, I asked you, I think it was here, I asked you when we were at Vulture City last year for Vulture City Paracon. So I know the answer because you told me, but share for everybody, why did they pick Vulture City specifically? Is it have some kind of connection with UFOs or aliens, or why Vulture City?
So Vulture City, kind of a big selling point with Vulture City is just its remoteness in the Arizona deserts. And then also a big theory that is out there is that the extraterrestrial beings, they utilize certain minerals to be able to power some of their equipment. And so that's just a theory that's out there, that they utilize gold, and there's an active gold mine being dug out there. There have been a lot of sightings. There has been a lot of people going out there at night, seeing strange lights, strange craft. And also it happens to be just north of Luke Air Force Base. So there's definitely some things out there. And another thing is there was actually one sighting spot. All of Phoenix pretty much is a sighting spot of the famous Phoenix Lights. So that's seems to be a pretty active location.
You can almost say, well, there's a connection between, obviously we just finished talking about Area 51. But whenever you're close to an Air Force base or any kind of base, there seems to be a lot more UFO activity around there. Now, whether it's because of that or just coincidentally, who knows? But then again, I don't believe in coincidence, so that might be your answer. But it's, again, usually with us, we haven't talked too much about UFOs or UAPs, I guess is what you call them, because since we met, usually we talk about the darker entities that you guys deal with. And if you haven't seen it, you know, where you've been, first of all. Second, go to the channel, the YouTube channel. It all their adventures are on there. And coming soon are the brand new adventures for season three. Yeah, it's a tease. So talk about how the indigenous, in your case specifically, the Navajo Nation, how do you guys see UFOs, the sky people? How do you see all that?
So as far as for UFOs, extraterrestrials, UAPs, those types of beings from the heavens have always been talked about in our creation stories and a lot of our ceremonies, whether it is the stereotypical aliens like War of the World status or some other type of beings from the heavens. We always have mentioning of beings in the stars, beings beyond the stars, and beings beyond the horizon darkness of the skies. There's things that come down to interact with creation. There's things that come down to aid, help us out, establish certain things. So to the indigenous and to the Navajo people, there is an understanding of beings beyond not just Navajo, but the Hopi and several other tribes also believe in star people, beings, some of their creation stories, having them being actually born from the stars. So there's quite a few different stories, especially diving into the creation stories, and we'll be diving into a few of those tonight.
Is star people, does that have anything to do or any connection with what people refer to as the Greys, or is that something else completely different?
It's a little unclear. Kind of the more I kind of hear about on a kind of UAPs, the Greys, star people, things like that, the more I hear about pop culture of it, I tend to sit back and think about our creation stories, and I do find certain similarities. I do find vast differences. So there's still a lot to be discovered and a lot to be had with all that.
Okay, so everybody sit back. Story time. Let's hear some of the stories. Yeah, I'll let you go here. You tell us whatever you can, or Sean Clan, whoever's going to take it, even the one of you jump in and tell us what you can about the creation stories.
So I'm going to take you back, I would say, about 50 or 60 years ago, couple generations back, that This is a story that has been passed down through our family, and it goes back to Hiro and I's great-grandmother and our grandparents. And I'll kind of paint the picture of kind of the area that they used to live in and this certain circumstances, living circumstances they live with. My great-grandmother lived on the Navajo Reservation in a very, very rural area, kind of mountainous area. And back in those days, they used to come on our reservation. I would say, when I say they, I say BIA, Bureau of Indian Affairs, used to come into the reservations and take children from their family to take them to boarding schools. And whenever the BIA used to come around the area where my great-grandmother used to live, my great-great-grandfather, her father, used to take her up into the cliffs and hide her from the BIA and told her, you're not going to be going to school. I'm going to be teaching you the traditional ceremonies, the traditional songs. So my great-grandmother never went to school, and she never really learned English either. So out there, they didn't have electricity, running water. So they didn't have TVs. They didn't have radios out there. So she lived amongst the people and herself. So with that, it kind of, one night, I believe, they were all sitting around their homestead, the Ho'one, and they were all sitting amongst each other, and they're getting ready to go to bed. The sun, normally when the sun sets, they go to bed because no electricity to turn on the light switch, you know, so sun went down, you go to bed. Now, one night when they're all sitting amongst each other, all her brothers and sisters were sitting in the home, they saw a bright light start to shoot out into the canyons north of their homestead. And they all kind of looked at each other. And then she asked her father, she's like, what is that? It looks like a giant. And in Navajo, she described it as a plate or a dish that came from the sky and went into the canyon. And her father told her, is like, these are sacred beings that come from another world. They come from the stars. Always recognize that and remember that. And you don't go out there. You don't go and try to see them or talk with them. They come down here for herbs and medicines that only can grow in these certain sacred sites. So you respect them, you pray to them, and you stay home. You know, you don't look at them, just let them do their thing. They kind of saw them as spiritual deities or very, very powerful deities. And they got curious. So the next day after they saw that dish come down, they went toward the direction of where it was, and they told us of a circle, a burnt circle in the ground that was formed. And they looked at it, and then their grandfather saw them go out there and told them the stories of what was happening there. And he pointed out around the dark circle, even though it was burned, flowers bloomed out of the ashes around the black circle. And he went over to some of the sacred herbs where they picked. He showed them where some of the broken branches where some of the medicines were picked in the area. So kind of further validating, my great-grandmother, my grandmother, her kids, they never had the influence of TV or comic books or movies back in the day. So for them to describe this experience without any outside influences really kind of blew my mind the first time I heard it, because, you know, how else would they know about this stuff? How else would they know about these beings that are out there? It's just like, you know, there's really no coincidence that happened.
Yeah, except for the fact that they actually saw them themselves. That's how they exactly would know.
Yeah.
So I was thinking, actually, you were telling that story, because every story that either you or Hiro have shared, it seems that it's Sean Klein, who, if you want to look at it like in paranormal team terms, you're kind of like the Aaron of the team in a way. Although the punching bag seems to be Pattaya, something they always are attracted to him. Something always seems to happen to you. You're the one that saw a skinwalker. You're the one that saw a Bigfoot. So has Sean Klein, have you seen in your own life, have you seen a UFO or anything like that?
I personally have had a couple times in my life where I have seen things that are unexplainable. Now, I've seen giant green lights shoot from horizon to horizon as fast as, you know, you blink your eye. And I've seen, even at Vulture City itself, during one of my tours out there, a giant fireball kind of shoot out from the sky, shoot towards the north above the town, and everybody was looking at this. And one thing that was really cool is with this bright light stopped right before it hit the horizon, and then it shot back right up into the sky in a blink of an eye. Now, these occurrences with these lights are things that I have seen, and, you know, it's just like unexplainable, because in your human process and the human thought process, you try to comprehend what you just saw. Is it a plane? Is it, you know, burning satellite coming through the atmosphere? And it's just like, all right, if it was burning trash coming from the sky, you know, it would just continue to go straight down, not shoot right back up. So, yeah, I have seen some unexplainable things, but I have yet to shake hands with an extraterrestrial being.
So you haven't been our first contact, is what you're saying?
Not yet.
Here, you had some stories?
Oh, most definitely. So with these particular stories and these particular teachings that I'm about to give, I want everybody to first take a couple deep breaths. I want everyone to just imagine you're sitting there underneath the stars next to a campfire. And I want everyone to really feel like you're more than just listening to words. Feel like you're more than just sitting wherever you're sitting, relaxing. You're out in nature. You're out amongst the elements.
Well, wait. If you're driving, feeling. Keep your eyes open.
That one, yeah, you better focus. But I want to take you back to a time way before the current world that we live in. And to the Diné people and the creation stories, I want to talk about the first world. Now, Diné people believe we came from worlds prior to this one. It is said that this world we're living in right now is the glittering world, the fourth world. The first world is considered the black world. And in this world, the only type of beings were around were spiritual beings, beings of no physical forms yet, and the insects, the small beings, the beings that would crawl around. And in this world, there was no light. There was no sun. There is no stars. It was just darkness. The only light source that seemed to shine bright in the horizon were on the east and the western sides. Now, there used to be some spiritual entities that lived in the eastern and western sides, and they got curious. So what's over there on that horizon? And two beings decided to travel. One male, one female, decided to travel and were curious to see what that other light was. Eventually, these two beings ended up meeting in the center and became first man and first woman. And then they went on their journey to discover what the lights were. And when they reached the lights, they saw huge crystals emanating a particular light. And there's a lot more stories that go with the beings and their ceremonies and the entities of the first world. But there came a time where they had to travel to the next world. They had to kind of gather the beings around. Some sort of calamity happened and they had to go to the next world. And that's where they came into the blue world. And they met more creatures, more animals that lived amongst them. Now, I wanted to mention that particular story because in indigenous cultures and indigenous beliefs, there are beings of other realms, beings of other worlds, beings of worlds of other creation. And what that means is when you look up into the stars beyond what Coyote placed up there, beyond what the Firekeeper placed in First Man, as far as for the directional cardinal stars, and beyond there are other worlds, and there are other beings that live beyond those stars. And those particular beings you have to pay attention to, because those beings have lived lives longer than what we have. We humans, our physical forms, our physical selves, were made from the earth. The Diné people were put together by the holy beings, hence why we have certain body parts that resemble elements of the earth. Then, real quick teaser, is if you can kind of look, there's always those sayings that, like, if you see something on the side of your eye, on your peripheral vision, you see something move, and you look, and there's nothing there. They say on your tear ducts, on both the insides and the outsides, that's where the holy people put little drops of crystals, little crystals in your eyes. And so when you see something moving in your peripheral vision, that's usually telling of a spiritual entity, a spiritual being that you saw using the crystals that are a part of your eyes. So to go back to those beings in the other worlds and beyond the stars, beyond our directions, beyond the star world, there are beings that have lived. There are beings that have progressed. There are beings that are advanced, that have great knowledge, and that hold great knowledge. And like my brother talked about, those beings that do come down, they come down in particular crafts, either with plates, or they come down in dishes, or they come down on crystals. Some even come down on rainbows themselves. And when they come and traverse down, you respect them. You acknowledge their power. You acknowledge their knowledge. And you're not supposed to go out really looking for them. You're not supposed to go out interacting with them. If they choose to interact with you, they say that there's a power that forces your head down, that forces you on your knees. And you have to acknowledge those beings, and they force you to acknowledge them. And if they have any messages, they'll give it to you. Those beings beyond, those beings in those other realms, they say some creation is in those worlds is nothing but good. Then there's some creation worlds out there that are nothing but evil. And then there's worlds of in-between, beings that were made of different anatomies than we are as humans. Respect those beings and respect their gods, because even they have beings that they pray to, they say. Just some food for thought, a little bit of quick stories about the beings beyond. And we still are acknowledging those beings, and we are still, I guess, waiting for the day where one of them's going to come down and perhaps say hi, give us some knowledge.
And everybody else can pick your jaws off the ground. See, this is why you guys had to be, again, the spiritual, the paranormal consultants, because you always leave people with their mouths open. It's like, I never thought of that. Probably because you never knew that, really, is what it is. That's why you never thought of it. But there you go. There's some more. So now, thank you for those stories, both of you. Update everybody on what is new, what is coming, what they can watch on your channel.
Yeah, so we have up and coming a new podcast coming out called The Meeting of Warriors. We already have two episodes out. So if you want to check out episode two, a very good friend of ours, Henry San Miguel from Paranormal Perception, is on there as well. And we kind of talk about, go in depth about the thought process and the human thought process when it comes to human world and the spiritual world. So if you want to hear a little bit more about some of Hero and I's conversations that we have every day, you know, you can go ahead and check that out. We have more evidence review episodes coming up. We also have our monster journey to Water Monster Mountain coming out pretty soon, as well as some clips from the overnight investigation where we heard the cry of the Thunderbird. Also next week, we are also featuring John Zaffis, the nephew of Ed and Lorraine Warren, will be on our podcast this coming Monday, and he's going to be given some of his knowledge and some of his experience during the night of the overnight at Vulture City. So he kind of tells about what he experienced when he heard the cry of the Thunderbird. So if you guys haven't yet, go check out YouTube, Unearthing the Supernatural, Facebook, Instagram, TikTok, and we also have a website at unearthingthesupernatural.com. If you guys can, please buy some merch, because it will help us out greatly on our up-and-coming season filming. And we have begun shooting for season three, so it's going to be very, very cool. And check out all the episodes from Paranormal Perception, because this right here is one of the best podcasts I have ever heard in my entire life.
The Night of the Thunderbird, as I'll call it, that should be the title for it. Yeah, that should be really good, hearing from the Haunted Collector, from John Zaffis, because you could tell in his face that he was just as shocked as everybody else
that he saw it, first of all, and then when Unearthing the Supernatural, when they caught it, you've seen the video, you've seen some teases. I think it's on both our TikToks and Facebook, and we have it up there, so you get to hear the story behind it. And the one I've been waiting for, kind of, I'll warn everybody when the, what is the water mountain, what is it, water monster?
Journey to Water Monster Mountain.
Yeah, that one, I will tell everybody, I've been waiting for it, kind of. If you're like me, you get a little claustrophobic, yeah, I might want to turn away in certain parts, because there's some parts where it's like, I couldn't go in there, even if they paid me. And again, you guys are pretty big. I know you in person, so to see you in there, and I could picture me in there, it's like, no, I can't do
that. Yeah, there's definitely a lot of times where I even told Hero and I, is like, you sure we can fit in there? It's like, we got to make this offering. We got to make it happen.
Yeah, so that one definitely is coming up. And again, I have a link to everything on the show description, and you see their pictures. Actually, I haven't done it before, but as you're listening to this, either our webmasters have put it up or it will be up by the weekend. Just click on their names; it'll take you right to everything. I don't know why I didn't do that before, but it'll be there. Make it easier for you guys. So let me tease next week, like I always do. Next week is actually going to be a friend, a longtime friend that for some reason has never been on the show before. That gets rectified next week. It's Ann Bender. Actually, no, she has been on the show, but not like this. She's been on when we do Virginia City Paracons. We recorded some interviews there. But I haven't seen her, I think, since 2020. And like everybody, it seems like a lifetime ago with 2020. So we're going to catch up on what she's done. And especially, she's been taking on some cases where she's helping families with kids. So we'll talk about how kids react and handle the paranormal, how you should introduce them to the paranormal if it's in your house and you just can't get away from it. And we talked about it last year with Patty Negri, so I'll continue it with them because with her, she's a parent, I'm a parent, I'm not a gift that she is, so we'll talk about, as a parent, how do you handle when you have psychically gifted children? How do you handle that? So we'll talk about that and some other things. So that's, again, Ann Bender next week on Paranormal Perception. So like always, everybody, have a great weekend, stay safe, and come on back next Friday. We'll give you a new perception, and that on the paranormal was Paranormal Perception.
The views and opinions heard on Paranormal Perception are those of the guests and host of the show. Factual statements are accompanied by backing data, articles or other corroborating materials, either stated on the show or included in the show description. Any views or opinions expressed on the show are not intended to malign any religion, ethnic group, club, organization, company or individual.
New episodes every Friday. Visit ParanormalPerception.show to listen. At ParaPerception1 on Twitter. At ParanormalPerception2 on Instagram.
Paranormal Perception with Henry San Miguel.
Paranormal Perception was produced by 22 Creations Multimedia, LLC.